Good morning. It's Thursday, April 19th. You're listening to the KPCW Local News Hour. I'm Carolyn Murray. Looks like we have Chris Robinson from the Summit County Council on the line. Hi, Chris.
Good morning, Carolyn.
How are you today?
I'm well. And you?
I'm great. I'm great. Thank you. So it looks like the county council last night voted to approve chapters 3 and 4 of the East County Code, along with a zoning map, although I guess there were a few exceptions on that. You approved amended provisions about outdoor recreation, and I guess last week there were quite a few residents who came to the council meeting concerned about some of the language in there. Can you talk to us about what you've done to resolve that problem and sort of what the background is on that?
We had two definitions in the code for outdoor recreation in this proposed code a week ago. The definitions were for motorized and non-motorized, and the definitions didn't make clear that private activities by a property owner were not covered by those definitions. They only rose to the level of requiring a permit. You know, this was in our zoning use chart where we have a bunch of columns that says whether in certain zones it's limited, low-impact permit, a conditional use permit, or just permitted or not allowed at all. And it was confusing a lot of public. Does this mean I can't have, you know, go on a horse ride? Can I build a corral for my horses? Can I ride my ATV around my lot? And we made it clear last night that we're only trying to regulate commercial and public activities and not the private ones by those definitions. And so I think everyone went away happy with that.
Okay, and the definition does use the terms tracks and race courses, is that correct? For
yes,
automobiles?
If they are if they are public, it includes motorcycle and motocross tracks, it includes snowmobile tracks and courses. Again, with the adjective that these are public and commercial.
Okay.
As opposed to, you know, if you, for little Johnny, you build a little jump in the backyard for his motorcycle.
Right, right. It also addresses traffic, parking, staging types of areas.
Yes, if they start to smell like a commercial undertaking, they fall into that definition.
Okay. And the language pretty much defines what smells like commercial and what smells like private use?
Yes.
Okay. So the second major item last week, you were concerned about owners of small parcels of property in the highway corridor zone, which my understanding is that's being basically eliminated. The staff proposed that within a year, owners in the highway corridor zone with parcels of 3 acres or less, that they could apply for a subdivision?
Yeah, so for many years, the county code has had a highway corridor zone that covered certain roads in eastern Summit counties and that gave the owners thereof, along there, the right to 1 acre density for the first 250 feet back from the road. And we're doing away with that because we don't like incentivizing the density all along the road. Because it creates a lot of curb cuts, and it means we just have these, you know, very linear development patterns, no real planning. People just go in and put a driveway in and hook onto the existing road. In an effort for fairness, and I was the proponent of the language that you read beginning last week, saying there may be some small landowners, 3 acres and below, that have highway corridor zoned land now that would entitle them to split it once, you know, or maybe twice, and because they have 3 acres, and if all 3 acres were in the highway corridor, they could get three lots. And I give them 1 year to do that because, you know, what we've been trying to do is be fair to everybody. It's impossible to please everybody, but we were, you know, some of these smaller landowners may have come up short, and I personally was trying to find a mechanism. In the end, the council you know, gave good reasons why that wasn't a good idea, because it sort of flies in the face of what I told you a minute ago of how we're trying to restrict the development pattern along there. And it, and we didn't, there weren't the votes to add that provision.
So it didn't go through. So what happens now?
It
goes
did.
Back. I'm sorry?
The chapters 3 and 4 in the zoning map were unanimously approved last night without that sunset provision to provide that relief to small parcel owners in the highway corridor.
Okay. And Doug Clyde did not support this. Is that correct?
Well, I think in the end he wasn't alone. The way it came down, Carolyn, is that Doug and I were asked to form an informal task force to try to reconcile differences and issues that came up in the course of our public receipt of public comment. And so we met on several occasions, including twice since last Wednesday, a week ago Wednesday. And this language was compromise language that in the end it wasn't deemed in the collective judgment of the council worth including. So it's not just Doug Clyde, you know, it was, as we reasoned together, we decided not to include it.
Okay, so what happens now? It goes back to the East County Planning Commission?
No.
No.
This has been a process on which the Planning Commission worked for years. They made a recommendation to us 2+ years ago. We took their recommendation under advisement and bisected it and dissected it, diced and sliced it, and then studied it for a couple years on our own, and were the final decision makers. So what happened last night, subject to a few little outliers, is final. There's no... The eastern side of the county has been rezoned and the development code amended.
Okay, so it's finished. Glenn Wright had some concerns about the code, including solar installations as a specific use. Was that included also?
Solar and wind were kind of lumped together in the use chart. And then it had these funky provisions that, in the definition, that it couldn't be higher than 45 feet. And it made one think, well, who's going to build 45-foot solar, you know, which may apply to wind. And so it was his recommendation, which was acceded to, that we create a separate definition for solar instead of lumping it in with either utilities or wind. Just to clarify it, it wasn't a big deal.
Okay. And then the Jeremy Ranch group, the Citizens Against the Wall, they've asked last week, I guess, the council to be involved in requesting an investigation with the governor's office. And just wondering what's happening on that. Is this something that the council is going to explore?
I think two of our members are meeting today or tomorrow with UDOT and perhaps with the Citizens Against the Wall. We have not had a chance to deliberate ourselves collectively on the citizens' press release and their request to us. We received them last week, but we've had our hands full trying to finish this this East Side Code, which, as I say, has gone on, counting the Planning Commission years, for half a decade or something. So this is a big milestone, and we were focused on it.
Mm-hmm. So Tom Farkas and his group, Citizens Against the Wall, have some really specific challenges to the assessments that have been done by UDOT. And it's interesting because UDOT doesn't necessarily refute the issues brought up by Farkas and the CATW. They don't refute it. They just keep going back to their original studies and their assessments. And I think I just wonder, for the two people from the council, are they sitting down and combing through exactly what Farkas and his group are saying? Are they, you know, digging into it? Because if they are not in compliance with their own internal policies, isn't that a reason to not build the wall?
Yes. I mean, I can't speak to what my colleagues are doing. I'm not among the two. And the wall is a very complicated topic. And, you know, it's like, unfortunately, many things in life. It's hard to know where the truth lies these mm-hmm. days. You know, everybody claims they have it. And discerning that is not as plain vanilla as we'd hope. UDOT has presented what they call an independent study verifying their calculations. Citizens say in a bunch of hooey. How we get to the bottom of it remains to be seen, but I think my colleagues are working on that today or tomorrow.
Okay. And who is taking that on, do you know?
I think it's Kim and Roger, the chair and vice chair, but I can't remember who they said yesterday.
Okay. And finally, Garf Ranches. The council had a closed-door session and then gave some direction to staff. Are you able to talk about that at all, some of the findings with that?
We're trying to find a way forward that, you know, is respectful of the owners there that, you know, purchased what was developed 30 years ago to be a recreational facility with modest improvements, if any, and what is now becoming year-round habitation. And at like everything, the demand for real estate and the economy is making these 40-acre-plus tracts valuable, and people want to build nice places on them. And so we're trying to balance that desire with the desire for the county to do its job on health, safety, and welfare, and for the South Summit Fire District to do its job, and to make sure that we're not complicit in a train wreck up there where we facilitate the construction of nice facilities that can have no emergency services for life, safety, and for property. And we think, I'm not at liberty to say, I don't want to be the one to disclose, but I think we have a way forward that will be acceptable to all parties, but it's too early for me to say that.
Okay. Information to come later. Anything else?
Yeah.
Anything else, Chris, you want to talk about?
No, I think not, other than just to say it's nice to have the East Side Code read down, and we worked very hard to try to deal with everyone's concerns. There were some that didn't get dealt with in the way they wanted, but I hope in retrospect, or from a historical perspective, what we did last night will stand the test of time.
Well, it sounds like there should be a celebration, maybe. What was it, a six-year project, something like that?
We lose track. It's something like that.
The years go fast, don't they? Okay. Well, thanks so much, Chris, for calling in.
Have a great day, Carolyn.
You too.
Bye.
Good morning. You're listening to the KPCW Local News Hour. I'm Carolyn Murray. Next guest here, I have Greg Schultz. He's a resident of Salt Lake City. He was a lawyer for Exxon for 20 years, and during that time, he reported to Rex Tillerson, former Secretary of State under the Trump administration. He started the organization Primary Out, which is a grassroots effort to address the Republican supermajority here in the state. He says he was inspired by an article from Politico that talked about turning a red state purple. And Greg, welcome. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks.
So tell us a little bit about your background and what has prompted you to get involved and create this organization, Primary Out?
Right. So my background is not political at all. I'm not a political person. I wouldn't describe myself that way anyway. And I moved to Utah a couple years ago. And during the election cycle for the last presidential election, was fairly alarmed at what Donald Trump was saying without the pushback or the reaction that I would expect from wide swaths of America, the kind of things that he was saying. And then when he was elected, I decided to get involved, and it just made more sense for me to get involved at a more local level. And at the time, what I wanted to do was to make sure that Jason Chaffetz wasn't reelected. That was kind of my very discreet goal right after the election. And that came to fruition a lot sooner than I thought, because he resigned, you know, right after the election.
So you've been a critic of the caucus convention system here in Utah, which is the way we bring candidates to the ballot. And some people, including yourself, say that it worsens the situation of a supermajority, and that is a problem here in Utah because it attracts more extremist views and doesn't necessarily represent the large group of independent voters.
Yeah. So the caucus convention, no one, if you just dropped someone from outer space into Utah or any state that has this system, and told them to look at the way that you're implementing democracy, no one would find that to be a system that is ideal at all. It's so confusing. It's designed to be confusing. I know people who are delegates who don't even understand it. And it's designed to suppress people from participating in the political process. And I bet if you went on the street and asked 10 people to describe how people are get on the ballot in Utah, I would bet you zero or maybe one would understand it. And that's by design. And that's not a Republican specific system. Obviously, the state has it, and the Democrats use the caucus system too, and it's just wacky. We should just have a system where people vote. You want as many people to be able to get on the ballot as possible, and you want people to be able to vote in 1 minute, not to have to go and spend an entire Saturday. Very selected group of people go spend an entire Saturday to pick who gets on the ballot. It's insane.
Yeah, the Count My Vote initiative, along with a handful of other voter initiatives, will be on the ballot this November, or at least I guess they're waiting for some confirmation on the number of signatures that were collected for the Count My Vote initiative. And can you talk a little bit about how that will change the participation in the primary opportunities?
I'm not actively involved in the Count My Vote initiative, but it's designed to provide an alternate pathway by the gathering of signatures, which is already in effect. Now the Republican Party, if anyone follows politics, has amended its own rules. Actually, a tiny group of people within the Republican Party, a minority, has changed their own internal rules to basically disfavor candidates who collected signatures. And they've gone so far as, like, there's a candidate, Ray Ward, who is a Republican, who won his, the old rule was that if you got 60% at the caucus, right, then you're automatic, you know, you win. There's no primary. And Ray Ward won by 66% or something at the caucus. And even after he won, the fringe right of the party then changed its rules specifically to target Ray Ward so that their favored far-right candidate could force a primary. This all happened last week. I mean, it's insane. Like, they just change the rules every day and again, I'm a Republican. I'm talking about the Republican Party and what they did to another Republican. they changed the rules after the fact because it wasn't what this tiny little fringe group of the party that actually had wielded significant power within the party did.
So tell our listeners about primary out.
Sure.
What does that mean? It's your idea of how to address the issue.
Yeah, it's my idea of moderating politics in Utah. And basically, my organization is basically a voter turnout organization and an education-focused organization. So the premise of Primary Out is that in many, many races, most races in Utah, the election in November is irrelevant. Because in many races, and certainly almost all of the federal races, whoever wins the Republican primary election will always win. And this is due to gerrymandering and demographics. It's not strictly gerrymandering. But so like in Utah 1, which is Rob Bishop, there's no Democrat. There's no political person who is a serious person analyst would say that a Democrat could win that race. It's just an overwhelmingly conservative district. And so the premise of Primary Out is, hey, everybody, no matter what your political persuasion is, not your party, whatever, if you're a liberal, if you're a moderate, if you're a libertarian, if you're a communist, whatever, you should probably be focusing on that primary election because whoever wins on that day in June is going to represent you 100%. No one's going to unseat that person. And so if you don't like Rob Bishop, then you should probably participate and vote for whoever's running against him, if there is anyone running against him. And so that's what we do. We educate people about that premise, and then we get them, because the Republicans have a closed primary system. So in order to register, to vote in their primary, you have to be registered Republican, which Utah, which actually has very good voting laws comparatively, makes it very easy to register in any party. You can do it online. It takes 10 seconds. You can switch back and forth 100 times in one day. And we just say, hey, make sure you're registered Republican in June and go and vote in that election for whoever. Maybe you like Rob Bishop. But if you're an independent or an unaffiliated voter, like most voters in Utah, you have to be registered as a Republican to go vote in the only election that matters, which is in June. It's not in November. And yeah, that data bears that out in almost every race other than in Salt Lake and maybe some little pockets, you know, here and there.
So yeah, like as an example with the congressional, with the first district, Rob Bishop's district, he doesn't have any opponents, basically.
Right.
There was someone that you were interested in trying to put into the convention, didn't get enough signatures to qualify. So tell us about what's happening with that particular candidate and whether that's just dead in the water for this time around, or is the United Party going to be part of that conversation?
Sure. So that's a lot of questions in one. But there was a candidate who is a lifetime Republican, former chair of the Davis County Republican Party, worked at Hill Air Force Base, very well liked up there. He ran against Rob Bishop the very first time around and came in third, you know, when Rob got his seat the first time. His name is Kevin Probasco. And he came across the radar of some people, some politically active people up there, a little bit too late. And, you know, we all hear this about American politics, is that you really just need a lot of money to run for office. And I knew that was true, but I never knew how true that was until Kevin Probasco, who was a civil servant. He worked for the government for his whole career in the Army, worked on the House Armed Services Committee, you know, like the kind of person who you really would probably want to run against Rob Bishop, even if you like Rob Bishop, right? We want a competitive democracy. And you just need, right off the bat, you need $100,000. So he spent all his time begging people for money, basically. And we just found him too late. I say we. They found him too late to get the signatures. So he failed. And because of this, I referenced it, this kind of internal war in the GOP. Even if you say you're going to declare signatures, they kicked you out of the party. And that was up in the air about whether they were going to enforce that. And they, of course, they created all kinds of exceptions for their favored candidates. And so anyway, he didn't even participate in the convention because he wasn't allowed to, because he had declared that he was going to gather signatures. So so there is another, I think there are a couple, there might be another Republican running against Rob. I'm not sure. There are two Democrats running against him. And then there's a very well-funded, by my estimation, based on what I've learned about him, very normal, kind of moderate. I think he's been a Republican his whole life. His name's Eric Eliason, a very thoughtful guy. Again, in a normal situation, if we had normal flows of information to voters, et cetera, he would probably crush Rob Bishop. I think his interests probably align more with that district. But he's running under this kind of new upstart party. It was called United Utah Party. I think they've renamed it United America. I'm not sure. I think it's part of a larger movement in the U.S. to create a third party. But he's pretty well funded. And I think people should probably look up his website, Eric Eliason for Congress. I'm not affiliated with him at all, but by my estimation, he's certainly not kind of owned by a handful of billionaires, which is what a lot of people say is the problem with Congress, and certainly with Rob Bishop. He just seems like a thoughtful guy who wants to do what's right. And I think he, because he has a lot of funding, that he's probably going to give Rob a bigger run for his money than Rob expects.
So if you throw a third party into the equation, aren't you basically splitting that vote, and the Republican will win in this case? I mean, unless you have a transition of Democrats or even Democratic Party candidates who are willing to step back.
Correct. And you referenced the Politico article, which is really fascinating story about what happened in Alaska over 6 years, where a bunch of kids, basically, they were college students. Alaska had such a supermajority, Republican supermajority, that if the Democrats lost one more election, they would be defunded under the state constitution. They would be like the Green Party. And over the course of 5 years, basically, Alaska is now controlled by Democrats. But they have a caucus with some Republicans in it. And it really is kind of a purple state. They were very thoughtful about how they did it. They went in and they had almost a third party, but they ran these candidates like an Eric Eliason as a Republican. And I'm not sure why Eric didn't want to run as a Republican. I think it's probably because, like a lot of people, he feels that the Republican Party doesn't stand for what it ever stood for. But at any rate, I do think there's that problem of splitting the votes. In this case, whoever is the Democratic candidate would probably, if they really wanted to oust Rob, they probably would just pull themselves from the ballot, because Democrats are no better really than Republicans in just kind of thoughtlessly voting party line. And a lot of them are just going to fill in the D bubble. But if there was no D on the ballot, they're probably not going to vote for Rob. And Eric is, you know, certainly I think he's more conservative than most Democrats, but he's a lot better than Rob.
Interesting. So what should people do who want to understand this more, get more involved? You've got the convention, the Republican convention, state convention is coming up on Saturday.
Yeah.
Where are things?
I'm a county delegate for the GOP because even though I've been on and off a Republican over the years, I decided to go and kind of get involved in Republican politics and talk to my neighbors, et cetera, and understand where they're coming from and to have normal conversations with them. A lot of Republicans won't listen to you if you say you're a Democrat. So I've joined the Republican Party and have normal conversations with these people who actually will listen to me. So one thing that people could do is have conversations without identifying their party or by registering as a Republican. And it's a very interesting, I can tell you an anecdote if you have time, from when I went to the caucus. I made the comment at the caucus to another, what I would say is probably not a super far right, but a fairly far right, by my estimation, Republican, that the chairman of the Donald Trump for President campaign is currently under house arrest for conspiracy against the United States, a statement that is so mind-blowing, I can't believe that it's not something that people talk about every day. I'm talking about Paul Manafort. That statement is factually 100% true, period. He's under house arrest for conspiracy against the United States. She absolutely disagreed. Like, she doesn't even know that's true because she watches Fox News, which doesn't report on these things. And I was able to have a normal conversation with her explaining what happened, that she would have never listened to me. And I said, hey, you know, I love Barack Obama or whatever. I'm not even saying that's true, but, you know, they just tune out right away. And so we really do need to start talking to our neighbors and friends. And a lot because of the Fox News phenomenon, et cetera, and people just are not informed. Sometimes you just have to be a Republican in order to talk to a Republican. It goes both ways for sure, but I don't think it's really a, you know, an exact comparison.
Yeah. So. Well, is there, like, for instance, California, is there a primary out, effectively, a movement there that's addressing the supermajority of Democratic voices? I mean, would that be a thing?
I'm not sure. I don't think so. And California districts are drawn by a bipartisan commission, and most people do not. Republicans don't complain about gerrymandering really in California and in some states, you know, like Maryland, and there's some other states that are very, you know, blue states that are very heavily gerrymandered. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting because when I started Primary Out, one of the things that the far right really complains about me fundamentally is that I'm getting people to vote in their, to getting people to join their party and vote in their party. And it's just so mind-boggling. What organization doesn't want more members? And it's just so crazy. So, yeah, I mean, I would encourage anyone who is in an extreme political environment where one party controls everything to participate in the party that controls everything.
Yeah.
It only makes sense.
We're going to have to wrap it up right there. Thank you, Greg, so much for coming in. Very interesting.
Thank
very
you.
Informative.
PrimaryOut.com.
Okay. Thanks.
Bye.
Our last guest is Carolyn Wara. She's the executive director of Recycle Utah. Welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So you've got a fair bit of activities going on with Earth Day coming up on Sunday. It's kind of like a big holiday for RU, isn't it?
Right. It's our favorite day of the year by far. And we kind of celebrate all month. We have good stuff going on all month. Sunday is definitely the highlight with Earth Day. We're going to start the day off at Swanner. They're doing an all-day event from 10 until 4. And we're hosting a trash pickup from 10 to 11:30. We're just going to pick up trash around the preserve. And then you can stay longer until 4 o'clock. They have events with the Natural History Museum. I think they're doing a nature walk, crafts with Kimball Arts Center, and then Eats will have their blender bikes there, as well as Relief Utah and some community power works. So plenty of Earth Day for the whole family there. And then you can take a little break, rest a little bit, and then we have our Earth Day celebration. This is our annual event up at Wasatch Brew Pub. It's from 5 to 8 p.m., and we'll have live music from Clark Urey, silent auction, and for $35, you can get 2 drink tickets and dinner from Wasatch Brew Pub. We're doing a burger bar with turkey burgers, veggie burgers, chips, guac, hummus, and more. Tickets are $35 in advance for that event. Those will be available until Saturday at midnight, and then they'll be $40 at the door on Sunday. And it's $15 for kids.
Okay. Can you get those online?
Yep. RecycleUtah.org.
Okay. So. Great. And then you've also got the household hazardous waste collection coming up for May.
Yes. This is next Saturday, April 28th. We do a spring event and a fall event of this, so we encourage you to clean out your garage twice a year. This is our event at Canyon's parking lot, again on April 28th from 9 until 1. It's a free drop-off for Summit County residents only. We do check zip codes as you pull in. This event is supported by Summit County, Park City Municipal, and Snyderville Basin Water Reclamation District. It is supported by Summit County business groups, so it's for Summit County only. You can bring us items like paint, varnishes, chemicals, antifreeze, gasoline, oil, batteries, electronics, pharmaceuticals, and more. There's a complete list at recycleutah.org. This is all the nasty stuff that you don't want to dump down your drain or put in your trash. This is stuff we really want to keep out of the water. It's kind of one of the most important events we do as Recycle Utah, you know, this kind of stuff. Once it gets into our water, we can't get it out, and then we pollute our drinking water. So it's a pretty important event. All the items are free to drop off unless you bring a mattress, and those are $10 an item. And again, a reminder that this event's for residents only. It's not for businesses. We'll have our curmudgeon, Bruce Erickson, out there checking. And we can tell if you're a business, you know, that there's a big difference between a property manager's amount of paint and a household's amount of paint. So if you're a business, you need to factor that into your business expenses and don't use this event and figure out, you know, another solution for you. And then if you're coming by, we just ask that you stay in your car and that our awesome Sunrise Rotary volunteers unload your car and don't bring your dogs. It kind of makes it awkward for the volunteers to reach in your car and grab your stuff with your dog in there. And if your dog dumps out, we don't want him or her to get into anything harmful. So let's come on by next Saturday, again at Canyons from 9 to 1.
Okay. And then it looks like, let's see, any other events going on? Green drinks at Este Pizza?
Yeah, that's coming up May 8th. We do that every other month. And we're taking April off because we got a lot going on. So May 8th, Green Drinks at Este Pizza. We're talking with local representatives about transportation. So we encourage you to use green transportation to get there. Should be nice to ride your bike or take the bus, and it's locally in town. And then May 12th, we have our annual Pride in Your Park Community Cleanup Day. We're going to be picking up trash at City Park at 9. So bring some gloves, bring a reusable water, and come join us.
Okay. And then we've got Spring Dumpster Days coming up the end of May.
Yes, we've kind of revamped our dumpster days. I think originally it used to be the last weekend of every single month, and then last year we did a spring week and a fall week, and this year we're going to do the last weekend in May. So that's May 24th through 26th, and that's a Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And then the same thing in June, 28th, 29th, 30th, and then we'll do the same thing again in September and October. So we'll give you 2 weekends in the spring and 2 weekends in the fall to clean out your yard. A bin for green waste, so like sticks, twigs, grass, clippings, weeds, whatever you've found in your yard, and then a bin for trash that usually I just tell people this is trash that would normally go in your curbside bin but doesn't fit. Obviously, no hazardous waste. This might be a broken patio table, you know, that you've had sitting around that won't, it's wood and we can't recycle it. You know, metal ones we can recycle. So something that should be thrown away but just doesn't fit in your curbside container. And we're trying to save trips to the landfill. These are all things that would eventually go to landfill. The two dumpsters go to the landfill. You know, the green one goes in the compost area. The trash one goes into the landfill directly. And we're just saving you a trip. So
the green waste does go to a compost area. It doesn't get chipped or any of that stuff. It just goes straight to the compost area of the landfill.
Yeah, if you go to the 3 mile landfill, there's obviously a green waste area. And that bin will go there. And then the other bin will go into the landfill. So again, use your best discretion. Don't bring us anything hazardous. At that event, we monitor those bins. We try to keep them clean. The hazardous stuff should come to us April 28th. So giving you lots of opportunities to get ready for a really awesome summer ahead.
Clean it all out.
Yeah, totally.
So last week, the county council approved a continuance of the solid waste master plan. And it also includes a new home for Recycle Utah on county property. What's happening with that?
Yeah, this is really exciting. I'm very impressed with the county and the county staff and the council for adopting this plan. It's got a lot of really great components to it. You know, the one I'm most excited about is obviously a new home for us. We've kind of outgrown our location. You know, we need to at least double in size to be more effective. The exact property is still a little bit up in the air, but it's exciting news for us. And overall, the whole plan, the goal of the plan is to divert as much from the landfill as possible, and that's what we do every day at Recycle Utah. So we're happy to be a part of it. And then they also have some great other components of the plan that are like composting, you know, commercial cardboard programs, a lot of things that I think can really extend life to the landfill. And it's excited to see the county take some steps towards that big, big process.
Okay. Anything else, Carolyn?
No. Again, Earth Day, April 22nd, this Sunday. Tickets at recycleutah.org. And then Household Hazardous Waste Day next Saturday, April 28th.
Okay. Thank you so much for coming in.